You're exactly right, Brad.
Where it's important to... You fear failure.
Yeah.
You only like to do things that you're really, really good at or whatever. Or
oh, no, you're wrong there. It's say, you guys want to start?
Okay.
We already did.
No. Let's start.
Brett, seriously.
You see, a person who's competitive likes to win and really wants to win.
I got notes here that you guys don't.
Accepts that
reports?
They're going to lose, and they're going to lose a lot. No, they're going to lose.
No, I see what you're saying. No, you're wrong.
Okay.
You're wrong, Brad. The reason why I don't play Brad.
So, what is your underwear size?
No, I'm just
I imagine it's the same as my pants.
Which is what?
32 waist.
They're shorter. Oh, yeah. The leg's different, though.
What do you
mean? There's no leg in underwear, though.
Well, some.
I don't wear that tight, skimpy.
I'd rather bikini. I'd just rather do something else.
Daryl does.
That's easy, better.
You know the
it's also a social activity.
I sometimes try out this boxer kind.
Also,
I would like
that. Exercise, I mean, because
my mom still buys my underwear. What
makes you sharp? You can learn
too. I don't know what I'd do if she didn't.
But anyways, that's not the point.
No, my bed. No,
that never gets made.
I think we better start.
Okay,
seriously.
Go ahead.
We've got all our laundry ironed out here.
Those aren't yours, those are mine.
Did you buy them?
They were given to
me. Oh, well, that's going to sound great. Peanut bags scrumpled on the air.
How about chewing them?
Well, I'm going to start off with the obvious question. And I know you've explained this to me before, ages and ages ago when you're just starting out. Why the name 5440? I mean, there's obviously got to be something really deep and meaningful to that.
The name comes from a little episode in American history when American president candidate James Polk had a campaign slogan which was 5440 or fight, which meant establish the border between the United States and British North America at the 54th parallel and 40th minute, which would put it up somewhere around Edmonton. And we kind of thought that was kind of a fun and silly concept, and of course it never materialized, and
we're gonna have to start again. That's gonna sound like shit.
No problem,
it'll cease forever.
Somebody's attacking me.
I knew I had to be the person to answer that question. I just stuck a whole pile of peanuts in my mouth when
well, let's get them over with.
Mm-hmm.
You can't crumple the bag.
So, you think I'm too afraid to attack something unless I know there's a big chance at me of winning?
No. I just thought I'd throw that out with you, see what you thought of that concept. Because I agree with that concept. Because I consider myself a very competitive person.
I wasn't looking
at you. Ah, you fucking asshole. I have no fear of failure.
Well, no fair.
Guys, you
know the answers.
Well, you have to ask me a question.
Go ahead, ask me a question.
Okay, the question again. Why the name 5440?
The name 5440 comes from an episode in American history. James Polk was a presidential candidate, I believe, in the 1840s, and he had a campaign slogan, which was 5440 or fight, which meant establish the boundary between British North America and the United States at the 54th parallel in the 40th minute, or fight. And of course that never materialized, and we thought that it was kind of a catchy name, so we chose it.
It relates.
Thank you. And there you have it.
There.
Get on to more deep and meaningful subject. The new album, Set the Fire, was recorded where? Mushroom Studios?
Correct.
One of the finest and most reputable facilities on the West Coast.
We'd like to think so, yeah.
Yeah, how did you wind up there?
Through our former manager, Gordon Graham, suggested doing our next project at a world-class facility, and Mushroom seemed like the best choice for us, all things considered. Facilities, people, price, terms, that kind of thing.
By the way, any of you guys can answer the questions.
It's all right. Brad's doing a good job.
Yeah. Well,
thanks,
whatever.
Phil.
As for Mushroom being a fairly accessible studio in the price range as far as top 40 type of studios, you, I understand, moderately successfully campaigned for bonds. You sold bonds as investments in the band. How did that...
We, like every other group, have very limited resources. And we're not signed to a major record label. We tend to do things on our own, just by nature, and as well as because it's our circumstance. And we wanted to do a recording project, and we had no means to make the money or to spend the money in the studio. So we thought of the idea of soliciting some contributions from some of our better friends, and it worked out quite well. We had a lot of support from some very good people.
It was just a thing we had to do. Either that or don't record anymore.
Yeah.
You get to the point in a band where, and we were a year old and we just got Phil and Daryl into the thing, and we wanted to make a new record and didn't have any money. Well, then get some. And that's what we did.
And I think that people who did support us wouldn't have supported us if they didn't think we were a viable band and that this new album wasn't a viable project. And I think, as it turned out, everyone's quite satisfied.
So the selling of the bonds and the sales from Selection, which I understand did quite well, both on college stations across Canada and on some of the Eastern Seaboard States radio stations, that all contributed to basically paying the bill.
Yeah, oh yeah, and it's a very expensive proposition, so.
$75 for a piss,
right? Something like that.
Yeah, I think Blair Petrie worked it out. $75 a piss. La-di-da, anyway. Also, with the studio at Mushroom, Jean Pichet has his Fairlight CMI there, and one track, The Sound of Truth, which was also released as a sort of demo tape to CITR, it's been re-recorded with the CMI. What exactly did you do with it?
Just did the violin at the end of the song. You can barely hear it. It's with the trumpet. They're sort of mixed together.
So there was no essential treatment. It was just run through the CMI?
Yeah. Well, it was the sound out of the CMI, a pre-recorded violin sound that I just played on a keyboard.
Yeah, he's a weird guy. He's been playing with that thing all the time we were there in his little room, and we'd always hear these weird sounds like dogs barking and
basketballs,
African symphonies and real symphonies. And he just said, hey, you know, you guys want to use it, use the sound, go ahead. So we did.
That's strange, because most people using Fairlight CMIs are working in universities, and I guess he's doing that. Did he receive any money for it?
Nope. Just
no, he offered it to us.
Heard the tune and sort of mumbling around, and
yeah,
we approached each other on it before, like just to check it out, see what the pricing was and what it could do, since it was at the studio, and it was a lot of fun, but the pricing was unreal, way beyond us, so we just left it, and I guess, you know, it's
right
a
at
good
the
deal.
The very end of our, excuse me, Phil.
Go ahead.
Right at the very end of our recording project, we just re-recorded a song. The Sound of Truth, and like Neil says, he was around the studio doing his work, and he just offered us
an amazing little toy.
Yeah, his facilities, so we took advantage of it.
It's also a $40,000 toy.
Yeah, that's right.
These toys these days.
The press kit you gave me had several reviews in it, and I think two of them, certainly to be included in a press kit is rather strange, make reference to, and I'm sure you're sick of this, Joy Division, Echo and the Bunnymen, and Gang of Four as influences.
Yeah. And The Who.
And The Who. I thought that was an odd reference point.
He wasn't going to mention that one.
Latin Jazz Fusion, wasn't that the other?
Yeah, there was a reference to that. I think it was even more so than the Gang of Four type of stuff. Well, anyways, I think what we have to say to that is...
Part of that, though, is always someone who's going to review you in a explain who you are. They always do that. You know, someone asks me, what does so-and-so sound like? I say, well, they sound like...
Oh, yeah. It's a bad habit. I do it even when we're
it's
writing songs.
By everybody.
We come up with a sound, I go, oh, that sounds like, you know, what I get from these guys.
But
the thing is, too, also, that we all did listen to those bands, so, you know, there probably is a certain element of truth in there, in that, you know, certain things that we appreciated about that music, we played. It's not like we're copying them or anything like that. It's.
But did you notice how they're always new bands? Well, other than The Who.
Yeah.
I mean, that's sort of out there, but... That sort of catches me. It's like, well, I thought of a better.
Fine.
Some of those reviews are selection and even pre-selection, and I think at the beginning of this band's history, we were very much influenced by the bands that you mentioned, and it showed in our music. And then, through selection and our latest recorded material, it shows up less and less. I think we've reached the point now where we're more an influence on each other than we're influenced from any outside musical entity. And I think our sound is very true to itself, and I think that we have our own sound.
I think that if you hear reviews on our new album, it will probably be a lot less directed towards those kind of references.
Yeah, other bands.
Well, we'll see.
Well, I would put to you then that true selection, those bands are clear reference points for that album. And with the new album, slightly, certainly the title track, Set the Fire, Rings of Gang of Four. However, all throughout, selection with the stuff on Things Are Still Coming Ashore, it really still sounds like a North American band, even though those are basically British influences.
Good.
We come from North America, so...
We're proud of it.
Well, how would you explain the North American sound that has come through?
Well, you can even zone it as to more of... just talking to someone in Seattle, and they were saying we have a very... We fit in with that Northwest, Pacific Northwest sound that's coming out.
Called regional sound.
Yeah, regional sound, and we're proud of that, too. This is where back to that first question about 5440, which sort of ties in too, because that's we're at the border now, right?
We're kind of natural. You see, we haven't forced anything on ourselves. We're more or less a product of our environment, and like Neil says, it that specifically relates to where we are, and we're in North America, and we're in Canada, and we're on the West Coast, and we're in the Pacific Northwest.
And
so
on the border.
All depends on how, and on the border.
Or in Surrey.
Or in Surrey.
And at Ripac. That has a lot to do with it.
Yeah.
You all hold day jobs?
Two of four right now.
Half of us. I held a day job.
The rhythm section.
I work.
We keep it down.
I work for Motomu Records.
I work for myself. I manage.
Back to Vancouver. Also in the press kit, I noticed that somebody was saying, I think it was an American radio station or college paper of some sort, was saying that you guys are too good for Vancouver and perhaps you should, he implied maybe that you should perhaps get out of Vancouver and go somewhere with the music. How do you feel about that statement towards Vancouver?
Fairly accurate.
Well, yeah.
Except it's a lot easier said than done, moving somewhere. It really doesn't do you any good. But, I mean, the scene here, there's virtually no clubs. There's, you know, only CITR as far as the music support, and I'm not knocking CITR, but it doesn't get very far.
I think from a business standpoint, probably would be a wise decision to eventually move out. But from a more artistic or just musical development standpoint, I think it's kind of good where we are right now.
Yeah,
this is
our home. Yeah. Well, I mean, the ideal thing is, to bugger off for about 6 months and then come back, take it easy.
It does change the writing, though. I noticed that when we were in San Francisco.
Yeah,
we jammed before, you know, during a sound check, and it was just from being in San Francisco, it seemed to change the jams. You know, we get back home, and then, I recognize this sound.
That is so true.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, touring is great. We got to do more of it.
That's all true.
No groupies as of yet.
No, I don't know why that is either. Personally.
I mean, ever since you disrobed it at publicly at Oddfellows Hall, I thought they'd be swarming.
Oh, yeah.
Did you take off clothes?
Yeah.
When
yeah.
was that?
Neil Osborne got changed on the stage at Oddfellows Hall.
Remember that?
No.
I had these clothes, and I took them all off down to my underwear, and I put on some new clothes.
I don't remember that.
I don't remember that. That was with Imagination and...
Yeah, I remember that, the gig with
Savage Republic.
Savage Republic from Los Angeles, yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Boy.
Hmm. I must have seen about 10 tongues just dripping.
Wow.
Yeah. It's that exercise you do.
No, everybody, well, me personally, I think they think I'm too weird. So I don't get any attention.
Let me just check and see. I'm sure we've got tons. I've got two set up anyway. Oh, yeah. Plenty of time.
They think you're too weird.
Yeah, I think that's true.
They're scared of Neil.
Well, they don't talk to me either.
We're not exactly the kind of band that promotes that.
We haven't been on the road long enough.
Well, I've heard people
all
say...
All that's true, too. Oh, what have you heard? Come on.
This is the nitty-gritty of the gossip in this
Good
city.
Good, right.
Regarding your music.
That if we wore spandex.
And I can see somewhat what they mean, and I want to know how you'd react to this. You almost treat the audience like a bunch of babies. Like there's sort of an obnoxious air about you when you come out on stage sometimes.
Hmm.
Almost flippant. And I've heard people say that, and I can see it. I think it's somehow compelling. But would you agree, and how would you explain it?
Can you explain it, first of all? Can you explain it? Because I can
now,
say
put that by me again, babies.
Well, no, it seems to me, and this is what people have you know, in discussing,
mm-hmm,
well,
mm-hmm,
how were
mm-hmm.
5440 night? Well, that Neil guy sure is strange towards the audience.
Well, sometimes it's true, I mean.
You should come to practice. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Let's see, that's a good question. That's a tough
Alan's
question.
Coming back
stop
into
the
you.
Tape.
I think we need some more beer.
No, that's easy. It's true. I do feel like that. I feel like, well, fuck, man, wake up. And I don't know. It's a totally personal thing, really, with the audience. And I've been told too. A lot of people just don't get it. And I can see that. A lot of people out there just don't get what's going on, you know. And they don't... A lot of people do. Now more and more do because I guess, you know, things are getting better. But that is a reason for some of treating people like babies is because, you know, sometimes they are. And they forget why they're there and who they're there. What do we try to do? We try to... express what's the real situation... In the environment at that time, you know, combined with many other things, with us up there, the way we feel, the way the place is, you know, just the reading the general atmosphere, and we like to feed that back to them, and that's what puts people off because they're seeing what's really, really around them, up on stage, and they don't want to see that. A lot of people go to a gig to escape,
mm-hmm.
for pure entertainment or for positive inspiration, and I'm not saying we're a negative band, but we're definitely like to promote the way we see things, the way we see them as they are. And
I think it gets back to being natural again. If
yeah,
whatever's going on around us, while we're practicing or writing songs, influences the way we write songs musically and lyrically, and whatever's happening. Before we play a gig, how sound check went, what kind of people we met, and all these kind of things, where you are, influences how you play and how you perform.
None of what we do is ever contrived. I mean, it's never predetermined, although we did have a very, very dramatic gig in Seattle where, you know, I threw down my guitar and things just went totally haywire, so we decided not to get too carried away. and to just be patient, a little more patient with the audience, and that's helped, I think.
I think so.
As we're concerned.
It makes us a bit more understandable.
Mm-hmm. And we you know,
I think there's different things that go into that though, and the people that probably talk about that are people from Vancouver, right? And I notice, I mean, I can't class people in that, but I notice a big difference from the audiences in each city we play at. And not that we've played that many cities, but there's a big difference across the border, you know?
True.
In the way that the audience reacts. So a lot of people seem to just enjoy being at a gig.
Yeah,
watching a band play.
Also, here we're still a local band.
Yeah. They're very open. Well, I guess it I don't know if it has so much to do with Seattle or San Francisco or wherever, being a different place in Vancouver, as much as it is we're coming in from a different place.
Yeah, that sounds true.
For them, but they seem to be very open to what we're about, and there's not so much pretense on either our part or the audience's part. They don't seem to be there for any other reason other than to see us or to see a new band, which I think is extremely healthy, and quite often you lack that in Vancouver. So, and that once again reflects on how we play and how we act on stage.
So you think the audiences in Vancouver generally are fairly apathetic and pretentious?
No. I think you will find a case, just from talking to people in other bands, that, you know, just because of the band has been a local band gets discriminatory treatment because they're a local band.
Yeah, it's a prejudice is what it is.
Sort of a grass is greener on the other side syndrome.
Something like that,
yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, anybody in Vancouver has the option to see us within a 2-month spread without any trouble. Whereas we go to San Francisco or Seattle or LA, whatever, maybe once, twice, three times a year max at this stage. And, you know, that's something to see. That's the whole scene, the whole underground new wave scene is like that. It's like, you know, who's coming to town that is rare and new and exciting. And you know, you have that privilege when you go on the road, but locally you don't. You know.
So you've toured basically the West Coast and a couple of Eastern U.S. cities.
No, so Eastern far? U.S. cities. Yep. We've played Ottawa.
Edmonton.
Edmonton.
We're going to play Edmonton, Calgary in February. And Kelowna, and hopefully Nelson, the art school there. So it's sort of a backwoods, grassroots type of tour. And then in March, we hope to be back down the West Coast. So that's the kind of places we've played thus far, and we'll continue to play.
A while ago, I guess it must have been a good 6 months ago, of course, the Vancouver Five, there were all sorts of musical benefits for it, and you guys were scheduled to do a benefit. I don't know whether you did or whether you followed up on any of those activities. What happened there with the Vancouver Five benefit?
Well, that's a good question.
Mark, stop the tape.
No, it's a very tricky thing. What had happened was Gordon was our manager at that point. And he phones me up and proposes, you know, that we do this thing, and I say, it sounds good, you know, I can go for that. And I said, phone Neil, see what he thinks, and tell him, you know, I'd like to do the show. And Neil tells Gordon, great, you know, because of the nature of the show, it's not like a normal thing where a manager just books you in, and they want to get everyone's attitudes and feelings all out on the table and established before you do something like that. And so anyways, Neil and I agreed to this gig before we'd consulted either Phil or Daryl, and as it turned out, that was the wrong thing to do. Daryl had quite a few strong feelings about you know, what was going on and why should we play a show like this. And he wanted to find out a little bit more about that, so he went and did that, and it really wasn't to his moral satisfaction. Or
can I
Yeah. Start talking. Go ahead, Daryl.
It's not really that anything was to my moral satisfaction or anything. I find that when a band plays a benefit, it's a different thing than playing a gig, and you should find out what exactly you're playing for and what you are, you know, giving your money to. And I decided to really find out what really, you know, this whole Free the Five thing was about. So I talked to the spokesperson and talked to her for about an hour, and eventually it ended up with her getting fairly mouthy, and she said that I was very confused about the whole thing, and she probably hit the nail right on the head right there, in that I wasn't sure whether it was right or wrong, so I couldn't make a, you know, definite decision to play something. I didn't believe in it, but I didn't disagree with it either. It's kind of unfortunate, because there's a paper that said that I refused to play because my father is a right-wing politician or something like that, and it really has nothing to do with that at all.
Especially since your father's a school teacher.
Yes. And, yeah, that's it. I don't have any strong views against whatever happened, but I don't have any strong views for it either, so I don't feel I should play.
I think also what Daryl mentioned to me at the time was that he didn't see the point of playing a benefit for something that he felt confused about. You know,
exactly.
You should feel quite strongly for the cause, you know, because not only is it the money that you're sacrificing, which generally doesn't amount to much either for a band these days, but also it's, you know, your band's name, it's your integrity, it's your
signature on the thing.
That's right, you know. And so because we couldn't be consistent about it, we had to withdraw. It was a very unfortunate thing, but
yeah,
these things happen.
The whole thing can be summed up in that there was a communication failure within the band, as far as, and then there's the two standpoints. The one, should you, you know, do you want to support this? And if you don't, then that means, you know, you don't really support violence.
Exactly.
And if you do, you're, you know, you're supporting, you know, whatever, anti-establishment, anti, lots of things, which are, you know, good causes. So, but the standpoint of the band, which is far more important as a band, is if any individual, an immoral standpoint, can't agree to do that, then we will stand behind that person in the band before we will make that person, you know, forcibly support a cause that he can't bring himself to agree with, no matter what. That's the standpoint of the band.
Because of the lack of communication, we ended up sort of halfway, so our signature got put on it, however you want to look at it,
so
one way or the other.
We,
you know,
couldn't, we decided that we couldn't all agree positively about doing it, so we didn't do it. That's all there is, you know, and we took a lot of the responsibility, and I think, you know.
Oh, yeah, we suffered the consequences.
Definitely.
No question about that. And there was a lot of, I think I felt quite guilty about, you know, agreeing in the first place and not consulting Daryl and all that. It's a mistake that we won't make again, but I think we're better for it. I hope too many other people weren't as hurt by it.
Well, I hear there's a benefit coming up for the Clifford Olson family. I guess it won't be the same. Never mind.
We won't play that one.
That's some kind of bad joke.
Never mind. So politics, really, don't come into it unless it's a decision of that sort. Into the music, the lyrics.
Well, politics is essentially bullshit, no matter if it's established politics or if it's left-wing. Whoops.
Yeah.
Never mind, it'll stick.
Yeah.
No.
That's great.
There we are. That will do.
He likes politics. Yeah, however, it is inevitable.
Well, it depends what your definition of politics
yeah.
is, you know.
Well, we could have kept it inside, for that example, we could have kept it inside the band if we had not already agreed to do the gig.
Yeah.
After doing that, it's You're right on the spot.
You're washing your laundry in public.
Yes or no. Yeah. I mean, if people disagree with it, then you're in their bad books, and then the people who agree with it, you're in their bad books.
By not playing the gig, we unfortunately made a political statement.
Or fortunately, depends on how you look at it.
Yeah, exactly.
Or you took the liberal stance, half and half.
Well, see, unfortunately, people think now that we are against this.
No, not everybody.
No, I don't think so. I think that's irrelevant, really. Yeah.
Well, I get the impression that people figure, well, first of all, you shouldn't have to worry about too much what a band thinks. And second of all, there was varied opinion among the band members, so I think most people have put it to rest.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah,
I have, you know.
Big okay signs here.
And I think that...
But it's important that we get onto this new topic of politics, which a lot of people tend to assume that on us, even by, you know, whatever, being part of certain things and involved in certain things, that we are, you know, aligned to certain definite politics, and we're not, definitely not.
We're aligned to ourselves is who we're aligned to.
Yeah, and I'm not, we shouldn't, don't want to sound too, what's the word, self-righteous.
Yeah, that's the word.
About that either. It's just that you've got to think of really who you are and what you're really doing and the whole scene, man, you know. Get it together upstairs, and then go where you may. But you got to keep an open mind. You've got to respect other people's opinions on things, whatever they may be. You know, I respect the right as much as the left, and the left as much as the right. Why not? I mean, it comes down to one person. No matter how much you can zero in, and you always get to one person. And on either side, you're going to find a jerk, and you're going to find a nice guy. So our politics lie above that. Our politics are more with the individual and his politics in his little head, and you know.
And how he relates to
how he really is a screwed up person, but he still doesn't walk into walls too much. He knows where the door is, and he knows how to get through it, and that type of thing. Can't get much more specific than that.
Yeah. What about the song Yank?
Yank off Selection. Gee, what about it?
Well, Yank implies, first of all, the very name 5440 and your explanation of it, and then the song Yank seem to be perhaps directed towards the United States.
Good, there you go. It seemed to be perhaps directed towards the United States.
Oh, we added it.
We
talked about this when we wrote the song and Neil wrote the lyrics and this three simple very, or I should say, three very simple lines to the song, and the Yank, the title, is spelled with a small y, so it's not like a proper noun. Therefore, the Yank means pull or something to that effect, and that's more where the meaning lay.
Yeah, it was definitely, the intention was the small y meaning the yank, the pull, and but
there you go.
Part of the philosophy too, yes, is the implication of Americans and let them think of it what they will. I mean, that's a lot of what the lyrics are about, is to take and think of it what you will, and I'm satisfied when somebody thinks it's about America.
Well, I think it's interesting. It's interesting.
Cause I wonder,
you leave
what
the option.
Think.
Eh?
Do they think is it you know,
if it
something against America or pro American?
If it makes you think, then it's good. That's the way I look at it.
Yeah,
I think it's just so interesting that it's there. The option's there to take it how you will, right? And
people will
so
draw from it what they
it,
want. Yeah,
most people don't take it as yank to pull. They instantly, you know, oh yank, yeah, yeah. Take it on there.
Well, I get the impression when listening to the lyrics, look the other way. You know, it seems that, I mean, they've done a lot of that with their foreign policy, with certain little regimes they have supported in Central and South America. You know, let's face it, they're guilty as charged in
yeah.
that department, and they basically are looking the other way because they're keeping out the commies, you know?
Well, and by the same token, so are the Soviets in their sphere of influence, too. You
oh,
know.
Sure, but...
So we could have called it Rescue instead.
Oh, yeah, I mean, I think you can play that up, and I certainly do sometimes, you know, on the stage in Seattle and stuff, and then I'm a little pissed off at the audience, and I say, well, this is called Yank.
Oh, that was funny that time. We got a lot of hoser and stuff like that.
Yeah. But I mean, that's our little secret, and it's our little joke, I guess.
Remember that time we were playing at Rex a long time ago, and they're talking about being a Canadian band, shouting back at us, and I said, "Well, we're not your average Canadian band," and they said, "Well, you all drink Molsons, don't you?"
And we had to say yes.
Yeah, we're drinking
Fosters. And
I drink Miller's Light myself. No. Miller's High Life, that's what it is.
Don't mind me.
Just the piano player.
That's all right.
Pacing.
What about the name of the album, Set the Fire?
It's also the name of a song.
Yeah, it's the title track song, which, for some reason, is a good song for that. Also, could be Set the Fire. It's sort of a statement, you know. Set the fire. A lot of things are implied, and I like things that suggest a lot of implications in a lot of ways. Like one time, I envisioned it. I always envision things differently, you know. I structure the words that way so that I can, depending on my state of mind, whatever, I can assume certain meanings, certain moods to words, and a title. Is that much more important that way too? Set the fire can be sort of, you know, spark, right? Let's get it going. Let's get it happening. Or it can be more so maybe what is seen by the light of the fire. Therefore, it's important to first set the fire. Say stop, think, look at yourself, you know, and then, you know, start the fire. Then there's a certain light you see, and then what is there after it's burned? What the ashes leave. It's lot all kinds of sort of analogies that I've always put to it, so that's why I like it. I mean, it's better than, actually, a lot of these could have fit the same sort of way.
So sort of a deliberate vagueness for that purpose, then.
Well, yeah, fire is a nice symbol. I think also the lyrics of the songs err on the personal side, and I think Set the Fire pertains more to, like Neil says, you know, setting the spark or setting the fire within yourself.
That's definitely the initial stage.
So, I mean, if someone reads something else into that that's not that, well, then that's their business.
But there is an interesting alternate that came up at the time when we were
named. Oh, yeah, some people think it's like, you know, dropped a bomb, right? Is that what
No, I meant that we might have named it something else, and it's so funny that...
Yeah, that's true.
Bomb Red Hot Video.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. You're going to try to read something like that into it or something. That has nothing to do with it.
Or, yeah, like reading Set the Fire, If the Bomb Drops, or When the Bomb Drops, or, you know, Bomb, Bomb, Bomb.
I hate that.
Bomb, Bomb, Bomb.
I hate that.
Yeah, I don't like bombs myself.
Well, we covered that.
God, this is neat. Have you played this many times?
Yeah.
Was it you mark it down, huh?
Wow. They played it today.
How's it doing? People like it?
These they
people
played in it there, twice like it? Today.
Oh, yeah. Hi, VJ.
Hi, VJ. Who is this? From what's AFT?
It's our
afternoon.
Oh, does it say which song?
Yeah.
Side
B1,
A,
et cetera,
et cetera. B2.
3. So they played Around the Bend. Side B number 2 and played Lost My Hand. Great stuff.
The joys of organization. Do you find that you were saying the 5440 sound, are you worried about that being an expectation of an audience, potential audience?
No.
Not nobody.
We don't worry about much. I think that gets back to it being a natural thing. It's evolved naturally. We don't force ourselves to sound like ourselves. And go ahead, Chris.
Did you steal something?
And I think it's right for the audience to expect that, but it's not something we worry about. I think it's right that they expect something that's original, that sounds under themselves, and I think we provide that. So getting back to whether we're worried about it or not, we're not.
I like the way you said it. It's natural. It's not a formula. I mean, if it is, it's a natural formula. We don't, you know, the next one's going to be different all again.
Yeah, we were talking about that casually a little while ago. And it's, you know, for all we know, our next record may just be violins and glockenspiel or something like that. You know, that's just the way we operate. We're a rock band, but we don't...
You just never know, do you?
You just never know, yeah.
Well, this is probably an obvious question coming from me, but experimentation. Do you have any plans to... I'll just wait till I calm down.
Because I know I've done this before in here, and every word out there can be heard. Cool.
What's the problem?
Oh, no problem.
He's doing an interview. You can hear him.
Exactly.
Go down there. Through the binder.
Give it up, people. Some people are so inconsiderate. Anyway, I don't know if any of you guys have heard my show, the kind of things I like to play, anyway.
I've heard them.
Yeah.
Many times.
It's mostly stuff that, well, first of all, I get a reputation out here as the man who plays stuff without a beat.
Yeah. Sometimes it's non-musical, even, I would go and say. But that's not all of it, I'm sure. Yeah. Like I say, last time I heard... What was it? I can't remember what it was. It was
non-musical show.
Pretty weird stuff.
PWS.
Yeah, PWS. Let me just think, Mark.
What's PWS?
Pretty weird stuff.
Can't get CITR in my head.
Yeah, well, I can't either.
It wasn't... This is one thing before you made some announcements right around midnight. You must remember what it was. He just played and he made a whole bunch of announcements. He said, if you'd like to call me, and he gave the telephone number, and he talked about a few other things.
Mm-hmm. Well, anyway, I find that while most of the calls coming in very much favor that, I get a lot of people calling in will play, you know, requests for regular CITR sort of stuff. And regular CITR stuff to me, and this obviously isn't going to go in Discord or anything around the thing, but just as out of my own curiosity, there tends to be a need for something they can relate to, a 3-minute pop or rock song with a beat.
Yeah.
And that beat at the moment means new order, whatever. Formula, music, the new formula, the new status quo of British pop bands.
Right, okay.
How do you feel about that? I'm not saying you guys are falling into that. But
right. Well, it exists, and if it fits in with what we're doing on the song, well, how should I say it? That's not even correct.
Sounds good to me.
Okay.
Well,
but it's the status quo does exist, and that you've hit it right on the head, the new British new wave status quo with a beat type stuff. But you're always going to get that. You're always going to, as music goes on, there'll always be a certain type of music, which is the status quo on certain types of formats, and sometimes the format becomes very varied, and sometimes the format becomes very polarized, and each station only plays a certain type of music. CITR fits into that, and they play like an alternative top 40 almost. It's so stylized, but to a certain extent we fit into it, and to a great extent we have very little or nothing to do with it. But it's not an influence. Well, it's not an overt influence on us, and we're certainly not a part of that. But yet,
I guess it depends.
I understand it.
I guess it depends on a lot how well you're keeping up with the tunes that are around. You know, if I don't hear something new, and it's not going to affect me. But what's it got to say for an original band that if it's got that same beat, or if it, you know?
It's really a strange thing. I think what's at work for a lot of these bands is that the desire to make it burns within them so intensely that they sort of get caught up in what is popular, what is commercial, what is acceptable to American ears, all that kind of stuff. And they get this producer who gets this drum sound and all that kind of stuff, and they put in the, what are those things called? With the keyboard sequencers and all that kind of stuff. And it's a big disco hit, and it's on all the radio stations and stuff like that. And I think that has a lot to do with it. And once again, I think that's not something that we're really really a part of. We're sort of in our own little groove, and it can flow in that and around it.
So it's natural influences again.
But I'm not. Well, I'm not.
They have a wider scope. Though. That's why I thought it was such a joke with the references to modern bands. You know, it's always so interesting. I hear tons of different influences.
They're not. It goes
beyond most.
Joy Division.
Goes beyond a lot of people.
You would say Joy Division sounds like the Doors. That's what everybody said when I first heard them.
That's what I thought too. But they did have something.
I'm not saying that I
think any less of those bands, because mm-hmm. there's such a reference point and such a there's such watersheds for this so-called alternative scene. But the fact is, they are new status quo. That's all there is to it. Mm-hmm. Like, if you'll notice the Christmas playlist in the new Discorder, there must be 5 New Order songs in a top 30. 5 Joy Division. I don't know how many David Bowie. I don't know how many Bauhaus. I don't know how many Jam, Clash, etc. But it is just the music underground has come full circle.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah,
and that should change again sometime, right?
How's it going to change? How do you see it change in 5 years or so?
Same way it changed 5 years ago. It's just gonna.
Maybe not
the same way, but I mean, it's change is inevitable, right? I mean, they're not going to be the status quo for the rest of time to come, are they? I mean.
Yeah, they can't be,
but the thing is, ever since there have been underground music subculture movements, as you had in the 60s, it took, I don't know how many, there was a lot of interesting stuff produced within the 10 years. It wasn't such a quick sellout. Whereas when punk happened in 77, the whole thing had sold out by 1980, 81.
Well, you've got a much, much faster paced society now. I mean, the communication moving at split second rates and people just not knowing where they're going. I think that has a lot to do with it. You know, you're never going to get anything to last too long anymore. Never. Nothing.
Yeah, that's right. People are a lot less patient, and they seem to be on the go and have to be bombarded by the newest sounds. So it's hard to compete in those circles. I mean, I don't even want to try.
We would like to fit in something, you know, on, and not really concern ourselves with the scene, you know, whether if it revolves around us, fine, and if it doesn't, hopefully we can hold our own. And that's a hard thing to do. I think a lot of bands try to do that, and they get sucked in by something else, and off they go, you know, and that's too late to do anything else. They have to ride it out and then, you know, get left on the...
Ride it out, yeah. Riding.
Right, left on the, like a piece of driftwood or something.
Floating with the
on that
modern
particular
current.
Wave, man. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. But in reference to your show and the type of music you play, I don't think that there's any, and I don't think there's any future for that kind of music to become popular, and I don't think that when the people put out that type of music, that there's any notion that it will be, you know. It's just an expression of themselves. It's their art, it's their music.
I think that if music does something to you, you know, moves you or whatever, then great. But I find, like, most of the bands that you're referring to, the British electro-pop sound, now that it's surfacing on AM radio, it's become just like every other form of AM radio. It's just music that, it doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't, and I think, wow, great sounds and stuff like that, and wow, listen to that snare sound on the new John Cougar song. But I don't, there's nothing that
I like John Cougar.
I get moved by.
Well, it's formula, basically. The problem is CITR has fallen into to some degree, a formula station. SPK used to be a really hardcore industrial, primal scream sort of band, and then they put out a really disco song, and we playlisted. And all of a sudden, I carted things off old SPK stuff and said, hey, play this stuff. It's great. It's harsh, but it's great. And people played them. I heard other people play them. And they put out a disco song, and it goes shooting up the charts.
Yeah.
New Order, everything they do. Cabaret Voltaire.
Yeah,
never got playlisted until they started putting out crap.
Yeah, the Cabaret Voltaire.
Clock DVA is another one.
Well, that happens.
People Cabaret Voltaire, it seems like they just got a new drum machine and a new high-tech synthesizer. That's all. They just got better equipment.
They
still have that you know, that background weirdness to them that they'll always have.
They're pretty much, yeah.
It's not funny. I just came up with a great comparison to that question you were talking about Neil or us treating the audience like babies. You know, it sounds like that everybody seems to be doing that with their with their song lists too. You know, it's like it can't be
Good
too
point.
Harsh on the listener's ears. They have to be treated with tender care, tender loving care. They can't have anything that's gonna
jar them,
rock their rock their idea of.
Oh, I love this. Some
of
this has got to go in Discord, or that's all there is to it.
Well, it just can't slap them.
Well, there's
the face.
Something to be
Makes
said
sense.
For bullshit. I say.
Yeah, you can get
it's
a lot of money out of it.
Mushrooms grow in it.
Yeah, right.
I like mushrooms.
Well, they're kept in the dark.
Feed bullshit. Keep them in the dark.
I can just see when Brad asked if he liked to do any kind of drugs. I like mushrooms.
That's right. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
You better say something else quick.
Could edit it quite nicely. Yeah.
That taste good.
That taste good. I don't know any that taste good.
Mushrooms. Oh, there's some great ones.
Yeah.
The red ones, as long as you scrape the cyanide dots off them. You gotta chop them up and boil them. Anyway. We're
drifting
here.
Drifting, yeah.
Digressing's a better word.
You have to put it into more than two syllables. experimentation, back to that. I love that. I'm sure you're familiar with various independent cassette releases, and that it's cheap. You can put out 1,000 cassettes and circulate them around for very little money. They can get playlisted on a station, you know, you can cull a track from a cassette release. And there's just so much potential for independent cassette releases. They're cheap, you don't have to worry about an expensive studio. Do you see yourself, if you ever find yourself wanting, if the band wants to stick together and do certain things, if either of you, any of you have any other ideas that you would like to put down considered cassette releases? If any of you had, like, Echo and the Bunnymen, their guitarist, Will Sargent, put out a fantastic album on his own.
Mm-hmm.
But and it's a complete departure from Echo and the Bunnymen. If 5440, I won't say take off or become a megastars, but, you know, if you guys do well and it's in your interest to stick together, and I'm sure it will be, if any of you have any, you know, solo inklings, like, hey, I want to do something on my own, I got some great ideas, putting out such things on independent cassettes.
Oh, definitely. I think I've talked with at least Brad a lot about this before, in that personally, I mean, this year I'm going to shoot for just getting a little four-track machine and just playing around. I like playing other instruments and fooling around and trying to make weird noises and
Oh,
things.
Don't we all?
Yes.
Everyone likes it, and I think it's a good way to get out your, the creative things you've always wanted to do personally, but you couldn't do it as working as a team in a band.
Yeah,
and as far as that goes, I think all of our songs are written from, you know, a 10, 20, 30, an hour long jam that evolves from something maybe very moody and slow to fast and rocking, and then goes, you know, and we just listen to it back and we say, we like this section, we can make it into a trendy little pop song, or, you know, a good rocker, or whatever, you know, whatever we want, you know, that really moves us a lot. And I think these kind of tapes is something we could do, because we do a lot of stuff.
That's how we write the tune?
Yeah, that's how we write. We just create it instantly.
So it is experimentation.
It's on tape, yeah, and it is experimentation, but the raw elements of that, I'm sure, could at some point be circulated. I mean, Phil always talks about it. He says, fuck, you know, we gotta get this out just the way it is, because it's great, and it is, because it's instant music right there.
Mm-hmm. That's how we do it all the time. We'll write, just put on the little tape deck, and away we go, and it pumps out great little recordings, and you can hear all the instruments very well.
Sounds
and it's the mood of them, though, the jams, are so much more coherent.
Yeah.
The four of us together doing all individual things. I don't know if I, you know, we'd have to talk about that a bit, but by doing that, it's not preconceived, it just happens, you know, and it's all very individualistic. It comes together just beautifully. And some of them, not so much as others, but we listen back to the tape and it's, you know, we all agree, oh, listen to that, you know, that's beautiful.
See, yeah, let's see, that's how every one of our songs is written, is from an inspired thing where we just start playing, right? It's like a jam and it comes out and we record it. Sometimes we don't have the machine on and we play it basically again, you see, because we think it has potential turning into a song, which we view as something a little different than just a jam, right? If, you know, we could turn into someday, I know that we've talked about it very, very vaguely, into the type of band that would just go up on stage and play, you know, whatever we felt like. And maybe one time we will. I mean, we've done it a couple of times on the encore situation where we just play.
54-40 improv session.
Oh, yeah. And they work, you know, pretty interesting.
45 minutes long.
It's such an interesting process. There you go.
But I mean, yeah.
Such an interesting process to come from that. Like, you listen to a jam and it has that original feel, the groove to it. It's,
you can never recapture that. So if you're going to have a song, you know, you have to take parts of that or all of that and redo it. And it's not the same mood. I mean, we've done a, you know, lots of times a great jam and my God, we didn't have the tape recorder on. So we go and put it on. And it's just not the same. You know, it's gone.
To also add to that is, I think in the future, if, like you said, we become mega whatever, you know, we may be able to afford to do that sort of thing in the studio, separating the instruments so that it'd be available to a mix from that.
I think one of our first investments is going to be, you know, a half decent little 16-track board.
Just if we have money, yeah. I mean, ideally,
that would be unique.
If Rave wins the $10 million, he said he's going to take us to NASA and, you know, spend 2 months and just create in
the
studio.
I'm counting on that. After all, the odds are pretty good. So we're like 14 million to one.
Yeah. Yeah, but if you know, it's a dollar, let's consider the financial aspect of it.
Yeah, that's too much.
The thing is, like, I just heard a story, though. These two idiots pooled their UIC checks on the last one, you know, and bought
I hope I get mine tomorrow. Jesus.
And they didn't win.
Tomorrow's Thursday.
Oh, well, 1 month of starvation. Didn't be.
Yeah, well, it's greed. It's kind of a greed thing.
Well, like I say, that would be neat. Because then you could keep whatever you liked of the original unbreakable groove that's so there.
Yeah, if we
so
had
there,
facilities,
chop it up,
make records that way.
Yeah. Take out what you didn't like.
Yeah, that'd be great. That, I would like to reach that stage. We're talking about experimenting and doing solo tapes and stuff like that. As far as I'm concerned, I want to make albums with this band. I want to make good quality albums, and I want them to sell lots and lots and lots. That's what I want. If, however, we got ourselves into a position where we could afford even the littlest bit of good technical equipment needed to do quality recordings, I think we would go that route. We're all inclined that way. You know, Daryl, Phil, Neil, myself, Miles, who works with us, we love that kind of activity, and we'd like nothing more than to make records like that. But as far as I'm concerned, you know, that's what I like.
It's not quite feasible at the moment.
Yeah. We're busy.
As for the near future, where do you see yourself in 5 years? What are your plans, the tour, the album?
5 years is a long time.
Yeah. I don't think we think
Although this year's probably going to go by really quick.
Well, that'll make it 4 years then.
Yeah, right, 4 years.
It's not very long compared to 75.
This year, it's essentially, I mean, the record's just fresh out, and it's going to be a lot of gigs. We promised ourselves 60 gigs for this year, and we'll probably break that, I hope.
By another 300, right?
Yeah, no. And, you know, and then, of course, touring, it's very important. I think Phil has talked about this, I think, earlier, is that we do get the touring happening before we think about creating more, because we've sort of flushed out all we have to this point, and we've been in the studio almost all of 1983 off and on and writing. and now we want to get out and experience some new things, check what we have, and then come back from that and
does
do some
wonder.
More.
It does wonders for a band.
That, you can take that 5 years quite easily. What we'd like to do is write songs, record songs, play songs live, and then that's probably a year, and then we just do it all over again. And I don't think we think so much as where we're going to be in 5 years or how successful we're going to be or anything like that, just that we want to keep on doing what we're doing. And if we're doing what we're doing now in 5 years, then we will be successful in my mind.
Yeah, because we don't have really any money.
Yeah, right. So if we're doing it, we must be doing something.
If someone's paying for that, then that's fine.
Yeah.
Any reaction for any major record labels?
Coming. Coming.
But next week. Like the album does well around Vancouver, you think you'll get anything from?
Oh, I don't know. We had some kind of interesting offers before the album was out.
Yeah, that's true.
That might have turned us off to that a bit.
Yeah, it's...
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I mean, it would be nice, but I think it's pretty obvious to us anyway that if somebody wants to sign us, then they just better know what they're getting. And if they do know what they're getting, which I think they would if they did take the initiative to sign us.
These days, anyway.
It's going to be fine. It's going to be really good. Because, you know, we get money and facilities to do things, and, you know, they get us producing, and that's all we want. It's where, you know, it's only if we're good at what we do, and the only way we're good at what we do is if we keep it natural, because that's our whole theme. And when that aligns with a record company, then we're in, but...
That's right.
If it doesn't, then it won't.
It would be a disaster to be signed by a major label and then not do the things on your own terms, at least the artistic part. And I mean, a good example of that was the Pointed Sticks when they got signed. Stiff. Just was a total futile exercise.
That was their tragic flaw.
But, you know, it's not really high on our priority list to go out and... are we watching the tape here, Mark?
Yeah, that's just about it. I think it's about a wrap.
Hi.
Yep. It's an interview. Yeah, that's about it. It's just got about 30 seconds to go. I think there's so much material there.
I'm pretty burnt out on it.
Hello.
You think so?
Mark Boucher.
What?
Is Mark around here? That's you, eh?
Yeah. Okay. Hello. Hi there.
This is our 37th.
Wow, what a coincidence. Never mind.
It's still recording.
We're just finished up here just about 2 minutes ago. Actually, John Anderson just walked in to use the phone. The mics are on and the tape.
John Anderson?
What?
I thought he was doing
gonna,
some...
I'm just going to take everything apart.
It's a different John Anderson.
So the last song was played today in the afternoon. It was
Lost My Hand.
Okay,
my
so God, I lost my hand.
What's the average here? It looks like
okay. See you later. Bye.
I don't know. It's interesting.
B3.
They also play the second one on the second side.
B3.
Is this the only play copy?
Yeah, actually, I noticed that Set the Fire sounded pretty scratchy. That's because it's been maybe dropped a couple of times.
A lot.
Well, got to get it happening more. Well, there's more copies around.
Where do I go to, where's the men's room?
Good idea.
The men's room is,
oh, I'm so tired today, I don't know why.
Pee-pee!
Important thing is not to take it too seriously.
The loudest band in the world.
Oof.